Welcome to Sweetland Center for Writing podcast series, Topics in Writing. I'm T. Hetzel, and today I'll be speaking with Dan Meltzer of the University of California, Davis. We'll be talking about the power of writing across the curriculum. First, a brief bio. Dan Meltzer is the director of first-year composition in the University Writing Program of the University of California, Davis. He teaches undergraduate composition courses and graduate courses in the theory and practice of teaching composition. His research interests include writing across the curriculum, writing centers, writing program administration, first-year composition, and multi-literacies. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. To start, what is the value of writing across the curriculum as you see it?
Well, I think that one of the interesting things about writing across the curriculum is that it's not just about writing. It transforms a faculty member's entire pedagogies. It's about collaborative learning and peer response. It's about student engagement. It's about critical thinking. It's about growth. It's about transfer. So I think part of the power of writing across curriculum, for sure, is students' growth as writers, students' ability to communicate. But there are all these other secret powers of writing across the curriculum that faculty might not be aware of until they get exposed.
Let's talk about those secret powers.
So
what do you see those as?
So, for example, when I'm giving a writing across curriculum workshop, a lot of times faculty come in just thinking that they're going to get some help with their writing assignments, you know, fine-tuning their writing assignments. But what they wind up leaving with sometimes is, for example, tools to make sure that they have good classroom conversations by using writing to respond to lectures or using writing to find out what students think about a topic or what they're confused by. So they come in with one thing and they might leave with entirely new ideas about how to have a more interactive class, how to get more student engagement.
And so you see that when you offer these workshops quite a lot. So you're not surprised by it, like what instructors' expectations are when they walk in. And you see them transform, sort of like what happens hopefully for students in the writing classroom when WAC is involved.
That's right. I mean, not only am I not surprised by it, I'm sneakily planning for it at the start of my workshop. So, you know, when I come into a workshop, if someone asks me to give a workshop on responding to student writing or designing writing assignments or writing to learn, you know, I have my main goals that are focused on writing for sure. But then I have a bunch of sneaky ideas that I know I'm going to bring in where I'm going to surprise teachers and ask them about some of the things they struggle with in their pedagogy. So when I give to go back to the example of engagement, when I give a writing to learn workshop, a lot of times when I'm asking instructors, you know, what do they struggle with? What do students struggle with? They'll say, students really struggle with understanding readings, you know. And so I have all these writing to learn pedagogies I can share with them. They're not my pedagogies that I made up. They're standard, you know, WAC pedagogies. But I have these writing to learn pedagogies that I bring to them that they recognize, hopefully, by the end of the workshop, is going to really help students retain ideas in writing or think critically about writing or interact with the writing more or even just do the reading. I'm sorry, I meant to say reading. I kept saying writing. Interact with the reading, critically think about the reading, even just do the reading, you know.
So you can have a discussion in the classroom where they can share ideas and weigh in.
Right, right. And a faculty member who comes to a writing across curriculum workshop might not think that they'll leave with ideas for helping students read more critically and engage with readings. So it's kind of a nice bonus. And I have those moments kind of baked into my workshops. Because I want faculty to see the power of writing across curriculum as, you know, very broad. It is a great power.
Hence the title of the talk and the chapter and the book.
That's right.
And so how did you find your way to having writing across curriculum being a main research interest?
Well, it all started for me as a writing center tutor. because I was working as a writing center tutor at Florida State University, and students were bringing in assignments that I found to be very interesting. The assignments were either telling me a lot about the instructor or a lot about the discipline, or the assignments were just really difficult to understand for me and the students, you know. And I wasn't upset with the instructors. I mean, they hadn't had any training in the pedagogy of how to design writing assignments. You know, most of them were PhDs in biology or chemistry or history or whatnot, and had not necessarily had any pedagogy training. But the more I thought about these assignments I was seeing at the Writing Center, and the more I was reading in my coursework in my PhD program about writing across curriculum, I kind of came to realize that these writing assignments are artifacts that are so revealing of pedagogy and people's values and what they expect from students, but they haven't really been the focus of a major, you know, research project in writing across curriculum. So I saw an opening there, and I was looking for a dissertation at the time, so it all worked out.
Presto.
Yep. Yep.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what instructors can do in the writing classroom to incur, like, with their, maybe is a good place to start thinking about the essay assignment, mm-hmm. and how that would, how there would be waves out from that that would include process and how you would structure your day-to-day in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would say that when I work with instructors across the disciplines, one of my starting points for thinking about designing assignments and thinking about sequencing and scaffolding assignments and the process as well, one of my starting points with them is to think about the genres in their field. You know, the academic and disciplinary genres that they write in and that students will write in after they graduate. And what are the kind of authentic, you know, real professional disciplinary genres, as opposed to the more generic kind of academic writing that presents students with not much of a rhetorical situation. You know, the audience is the teacher is going to grade it. The criteria seem to be just the idiosyncratic creation of the teacher, at least in the student's appearance of it. The genre might be an essay or an exam or a research paper, but it's this kind of generic school genre that students bring a lot of negative baggage to, you know. So I try to help instructors break out of that by imagining more authentic genres, the actual kinds of writing that they do as professionals. That they do as academics, and then thinking about ways to assign that for students. And then when you're talking about process, I think there's a connection there too, because when I start to talk with faculty about themselves as writers and what they do, what I inevitably find out is that they're usually writing in authentic genres to wider audiences, and they're usually revising a lot and getting feedback through peer review and things like that, and then doing more revising and more editing. So if I can convince faculty that here are the processes that you engage in as a professional, as an expert, how can we get students to mimic those processes and be apprentices for those, initiate them to those processes, then usually they'll start thinking more about, hopefully, more about teaching writing as a process, peer review, feedback during drafts, and also teaching more authentic types of genres than just some kind of generic assignment like compare this to that.
Could you talk about a particular example, perhaps? Because you've shared with me two essay examples. Could you talk about the successes of one and maybe some of the attempts of the other?
So the successes of something that I've assigned or something in a workshop that we've talked about?
Well, with this example assignment number two, Cyborg Society Ethnographic Research Article.
Okay, so an example from my workshop.
Yes.
I see what you're getting
great.
At there. So one of the things I do in my workshop is I often present faculty with an assignment from my research. So this study I've done, Assignments Across Curriculum, of 2,000 writing assignments in different disciplines. And I've got a ton of assignments for my research that I use in workshops. So I'll share an assignment that doesn't present much of a rhetorical situation, you know, kind of a generic essay exam with really broad questions that the instructor might really be focused on correctness and grammar and making sure everything is perfect. So I'll take an assignment like that, and I'll either ask faculty members to think about ways to revise it to make it more authentic genre and a richer rhetorical context, or I'll just revise it myself and present an alternative. So in this case, I took that assignment from my research, an assignment that was just a kind of a standard essay exam, and I turned it into...
Because it was two short answers.
A bunch of short answers.
And they weren't even interconnected.
A bunch of short, yeah. So this assignment from my research was from a sociology class. And it was asking students to, it was an essay exam, and asking students to choose from a bunch of kind of broad topics that they were, and very strict kind of rules about how they needed to respond and what they needed to do. So I don't think it would be a very engaging assignment for students. The students bring a lot of negative baggage to the whole idea of exam taking, and the questions were very kind of abstract and broad. It required some synthesis of readings, but nothing substantial, or it didn't require that much critical thinking, you know? So I thought, how can we revise this assignment to meet the same kinds of learning outcomes for the course, but do it in a more authentic and in-depth way for students in terms of critical thinking and research? So the idea I came up with that I'm using in my workshop is, if I can jog my memory, is an ethnography research article where students are going out to an online community that they're a part of or that they want to know more about and conducting a little mini ethnography. So the genre is like an academic research article writing up the ethnography. And the audience is actually a journal that publishes student writing. So there's this kind of hypothetical audience. And they would be writing it in stages from a proposal to an annotated bibliography, doing peer response. And then in the final evaluation, the instructor would read it like an editor of the journal and give students a revise and resubmit or publish as is, that kind of thing. So I tried to reimagine the assignment in terms of an authentic disciplinary genre requiring research, requiring an extensive process. And I just feel like almost any school assignment an instructor can come up with, those same goals can be achieved in more effective ways by assigning an actual genre from the discipline.
And could you talk about that in relation to first year writing courses?
Now, first year writing presents a different challenge, right? Because when I work with writing across curriculum faculty, they bring some very specific genres related to their field, like lab reports or history book reviews, things like that. They can easily name disciplinary and professional genres. First year writing is a little bit of a different beast because you ask yourself, well, this is a course that the premise is preparing students for writing across the curriculum at the university. And so what are the genres? You know, what genres should we teach? In my research in assignments across the curriculum, I found that there's just a vast amount of genres out there. And so to look at first-year composition and say, well, we need to teach this genre or that genre, I think it's impossible to make that argument because which genre is going to best prepare students for academic writing? I don't know.
It depends on their path.
Right, right. So my personal kind of, not my personal, but the way out of that or my thinking on that is aligned with the writing about writing folks who feel that, well, if first year comp can't be a class that prepares students for every single discipline and every single other class, it could be a class about writing, where students learn about what we know about writing, and students reflect on their writing theories and philosophies, and students critically reflect on themselves as writers. And so if that's the premise with writing about writing, you know, the Downs and Wardle approach, then what follows from there is the genres we teach then should be something having to do with students researching writing and thinking about themselves as writers. So that might be, you know, an academic research article about writing or a discourse community analysis or rhetorical analysis of the kinds of writing students want to do or an ethnographic research project on students' majors, you know, these kinds of writing about writing assignments, I personally think are very effective for the premise of first-year composition, which I don't think can be to prepare students for all the writing they do, but it can be to help students make the transition from high school to college writing.
And it sounds like also with these, what you've been talking about, Dan, it feels like this you could more easily transfer, like you would be equipping the students to see how they're critically thinking about writing and practicing writing. And it feels like that would arm them with transfer.
That is a great point. I mean, when you really stop to think about what is our situation in first year composition? We have them for one semester, or maybe one quarter, if we're in the quarter system, 10 or 14 weeks, 10 or 15 weeks. So what can we do in that time? It's such a short time in their writing lives. And to me, the best thing we can do are the things that will transfer to future writing context, you know? So if we focus in on transfer, I think that's our best bet for having an impact on students in the long term, and not just, yes, helping them understand how to write an introduction, you know, the way you want them to write an introduction, or, you know, how to revise this one paper so that it's more developed. I mean, that's one thing, but to me, the most important part of a writing class are the lessons you learn about writing that you can carry with you to future writing context.
And the practices, and maybe even understanding the idea of the importance of process, and that it's a practice, it takes time.
You know, if students walk away from my writing class having forgotten every writing assignment we do and everything I said in my rambling speeches in class and every PowerPoint and every reading, if one thing they walk away with forever for the rest of their lives, you know, fingers crossed, is, oh, good writers don't write in one draft. Good writers revise and seek out feedback and go through this extensive process, and they implement that in all of their future writing, or at least most of their future writing. I'll be a happy man, you know. I would be satisfied with that as a writing teacher, you know.
Me too. I would definitely be happy woman. well, Dan, let's talk a little bit about building a sustainable WAC program. How is that possible? Because it's valuable. I'm convinced of it. I see it happening. I can hear it in what you're saying. So what are some elements to building a sustainable WAC program?
Well, building a sustainable WAC program is really difficult. You know, 50%, the research shows that 50% of WAC programs fail. And it's not because WAC pedagogy isn't powerful or people aren't putting their spirit and their heart into it. It's because of the external constraints and because the way of the program was conceived and executed. And if you look at the features of sustainable programs and what they have in common, one thing they seem to have in common is a director with expertise who has the appropriate amount of release time to make this happen. So it's not just someone who's doing WAC on top of everything else they're doing full time. And they've been given, you know, one class off to, and they got 2 years and they've got to fix all the writing on campus, you know. So WAC also can't be seen as a quick fix. The more sustainable programs are the programs that do long-term planning and plan for decades and not, you know, semester to semester. Another feature of sustainable programs is usually, even though there's usually someone with expertise or people with expertise in leadership roles, there's usually some distribution of leadership as well, so that the faculty take ownership and the faculty across disciplines take leadership roles. That might mean moving WAC practices into departments so that certain faculty are department leaders, you know, within their department. That might mean having a writing committee, a campus writing committee, or a writing intensive advisory board. The writing across curriculum programs that have sustained over decades almost all have some kind of committee or advisory board that distributes the leadership. And then I think one last really important feature of sustainable WAC programs is that they move beyond just like one-shot workshops, mm-hmm. where they're just offering a workshop here and there, semester to semester, working with a small group of faculty. and they move into more macro level changes and macro level reforms, macro level activities, kind of systems level, institutional level activities. For example, shifting from like a small series of workshops to annual signature events that faculty can go to, like learning communities or retreats, where every year, year in and year out, they're building faculty, faculty can count on it. They're doing these more sustainable activities. And the WAC director is spending more and more of their time at higher levels of the institution, not just giving a workshop to a handful of, you know, true believers who keep coming back, but maybe going into departments and working with department curriculum committees, working on writing assessment with departments or colleges, maybe going up to the level of working on reforms to writing intensive classes and building shared criteria for those classes or doing assessment with those classes. So doing kind of partnerships with other units, you know. So going beyond that micro level work, that's an important starting place, but moving towards the macro work, I think, is another feature of sustainable WAC programs.
Taking it back for a moment to the instructor and the student in the writing classroom, what are the opportunities that you see in contract grading?
Well, I am a huge supporter of contract grading. One of the things that I've seen in my research on writing assignments is that instructors can be very focused on grading and evaluating and assessing, often in some very harsh ways and picky ways. The research shows that students do not react well to that, that students lose confidence, lose motivation when they're constantly graded and it's always high stakes and they're always worried about their grade. The research also shows that students are more engaged when they don't feel like they're constantly being judged and graded. So I see contract grading as an excellent tool to move the focus for students on trying to give the teacher what the teacher wants, always getting graded and worrying about grades, to focus more on process and labor, you know, putting the work in, going through a process, and not having to constantly focus on a grade. And the thing that I found doing contract grading that I wasn't sure about when I first started to do it is that students put in the same amount of work in my contract grading class and do just as well on their final drafts, their portfolios, as when I used to do more standardized grading. So what I found is that as long as students put the labor into the process, that they do grow, that they do revise, that they do come up with good final products as well. So contract grading is not a softer kind of grading, or it doesn't lead to worse writing, you know, or less labor. Quite the contrary. I found that students work harder in contract grading, so therefore usually come up with final drafts that are really good.
Maybe more risk-taking because it's not so grade-centric or the high-stakes feeling.
You know, just the other day in my class, I was telling students are writing a research project, and they're aiming it at a target journal, but they keep asking me what I want. You know, what do I want to see?
So how do you redirect that?
Well, I'm thinking about that in terms of contract grading, because I went back to the grading contract, and even though they haven't totally bought in yet because we've just started talking about it and they're not used to contract grading, they don't know what it is yet, but they're learning. But I was showing them, looking at the contract, that in the end, what I'm doing is I'm going to figure out how much labor you put into this. You're going to help me figure that out by reflecting and guiding me about how much labor you put into it. And that's how I'm going to finally grade you. You know, that's what your final grade is going to be. Did you do the labor or not? I'm not going to look so much at, did you meet this particular set of criteria that I've established for you? Am I pleased with what you've done? Is my subjective judgment of the quality of your writing the be-all and end-all here? So we had an interesting conversation in class about, you know, who's the grader of this work and who's the judge and what is an evaluation and what is judgment when it comes to writing. And the contract really helped me move them away from thinking of me as the only audience, as the grader, with their role being just, you know, giving me what I want.
Well, that sounds great to me. Thanks, Dan. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Sweetland podcast series, Topics in Writing, recorded at the University of Michigan. For more information about the Sweetland Center for Writing, visit us on the web at lsa.umich.edu/Sweetland.